Okay, episode 23. You guys miss all the dumb stuff before we start. Something like that.
You do.
You know, today's an interesting topic. As all of you know, I get to hunt with, well, Jen will be my wife in September, fiance right now, right here. And I really enjoy that. I think it's a good thing for several reasons. What about you? Do you think it's a good thing that you get to hunt with me?
Well, we don't do a lot of hunting together, but there is quite a few times. Like when I say together in the same tree or in the same redneck, we like to do that as a family here and there through the season. But it truly is fun. It's especially when we're sitting in different stands, we can text back and forth and like, hey, this is what I'm seeing and this is what I'm not. Yeah. Opening day in Wisconsin this year.
Oh, yeah.
Whew, it was like every 5 minutes, like, oh, there's another one. Oh, there's another one.
You saw a lot in Wisconsin. That was fun. And it got to a point, too, where I had a really nice 10-point come in.
Oh, man. I was begging for that thing to come
in. I'm sending you pictures. I'm taking video of it. And I'm like, oh, I just hope it goes over your way. And it went over your way, your direction, but then it came back. Right. So when it came back, I'm like, it's going the wrong way.
It sensed me. Like,
well, all those other deer were around you.
Well,
I mean, what you saw, like, how many bucks?
I don't even remember.
Like, different bucks. Yeah, all, unfortunately, young ones, but.
Yeah, but still, that big one, I think he just sensed death, and he didn't want to come over, which I don't blame
him. Or with me, he just knew, he's not going to shoot me.
Right, but with her, I'm a goner.
He was a cool-looking 10-point, too.
He was. Like, his main beams almost touched.
Yeah.
Yeah, so really cool.
And slick swept up.
Yeah, it was neat. But it's fun to do that together. Just something that you can have in common with your spouse. It's just, it brings it closer as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like?
Well, you know, I'll back up for a second too. You know what's crazy? I was meeting with the Huntwise crew on my Michigan trip.
Yeah.
Met with, Nate, Andy, and the boys, and had a good conversation with them. And it was interesting. We were talking about getting your spouses, wives. I hate saying wives all the time because it sounds sexist, but the real truth of the matter is on this channel, the active users, about 7% women. Does that surprise you, that number?
No, not at all.
Well, you know what was interesting is I want to say the Drury Brothers on Instagram had a poll, and what are the number of women hunters out there? And they had a number like 40% of all hunters are women. I thought that was extremely and excessively high.
Sure.
And I'll tell you why, because I see these numbers, but these are just my numbers. They're HuntWise's numbers. And there are a lot of other hunting industry companies that their product, and I'd be curious to know First Light, for example, what they market to, what their percentage and segment of women purchasers are of First Light clothing, even though they have, you know, gear dedicated to women hunters. It's a very small segment if you look at, like, clothing.
It is.
Where it's women or gender-specific for clothing, it's a very small percentage that's even for sale.
Well, and that's the hunting industry, I think, in general. You go, you have a male section and then female perspective of it. You go to that section and you're like, I think I'm going to go back to the men's. Take a look and see what's there. Just, you know, and I think that, you know, goes back to the, you know, that very small percentage of women out there hunt.
Yeah. I was just trying to remember my client that I had in Michigan, just really quick, wanted to give a healthy shout out to Colton. And I want to say his sister's name is Lissa. I think it's Lissa.
You better be right.
It's Lissa.
If he's not right.
Part of the problem is Colton came to me and he said, hey, can you give me a shout out? I was leaving his dad, you know, a client visit. And I said, well, that's really nice. You could tell he was a little nervous to ask. He had something to ask. And that's what he asked. I believe he's 10. And he shot two deer last year. I want to say he shot his first buck, too. I got to sign the plaque on the back of the European mount. So it was pretty cool. I was excited for him. But then he said, my sister really wants a shout out too, but she's too shy to ask.
That's
so
cute.
Anyways, I'm sorry if I got names incorrect, but it was a pure joy meeting kids and future boy and girl and young men and women hunters.
Especially young kids that just enjoy the outdoors so much.
Which says a lot about mom and dad. And I got to meet them too. And it was pretty cool. So.
Yeah.
But anyways, I wanted to give you guys a shout out and tell you it was awesome to meet you and get to know your family a little bit.
Yeah, it's fun to hear about your clients. From the house anyways.
All kinds of different stories, huh?
Yeah, and I would say a majority of them, a very high majority of them are, they're fun. All your days are fun.
There are a lot of really, really good people. And you know what's interesting? I've had, I want to say, out of close to 1,600 parcels and clients around the country, I've had roughly four that are women that were into it that much that they actually were the ones that hired me. And I went out there, and at least two of those, their husbands rarely, if ever, hunted.
Yeah, that's not very common.
So that's, not very common at all. So when I say men, sometimes I slip up and I'll say you guys or something. I almost feel bad because there are really hardcore women hunters out there. Someone we'd love to have as a guest. I just haven't asked her, and it'll be great to see if she could bless us with her presence along with her husband. But it'd be great to have them both here. Mm-hmm. And it's Melissa Bachman. She is hardcore, meaning she goes to a lot of their own stuff that they do in habitat and then also other land. She's been on public land, but she's a fellow Minnesota hunter, her and her husband. So it'd be cool to get her on because I've seen some of the comments that she's gotten in the past. Social media I think people assume because you're a woman sometimes that this stuff's being gifted to you, that you don't work hard, you just show up and pull the trigger.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And boy, it was back in the day, and I don't even remember who it was. I wouldn't even say the name if I did. I honestly don't remember. Mm. But the person was trying to pull back and shoot a, do you remember this? Oh, this is going back a ways. So I used to watch a lot of videos, especially the early Drury Brothers stuff. And then just for pure entertainment and just, there's something about even though it's a hunting video, watching that buck come through the woods and hearing that step, 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 step of a mature buck, knowing it's coming. But I watched Realtree Monster Bucks, love watching Michael Wiedel and stuff back in the day. Hunter Specialty had a lot of videos out, and those were, we're hunting at XYZ Outfitter. Here's XYZ Guide, and this is our hunt. And that was okay. I still liked the sights and sounds. I really did. And we used to watch those with the kids a lot when they were growing up, the youngsters. And so also the Kiskies. I'm going to forget some going back, but I really enjoyed some of those earlier ones. And so that was always enjoyable. But on this one in particular, the woman is trying to pull her bow back to make the shot, and the cameraman actually reached up and helped her pull her bow back. And that almost like, probably too much poundage in that case. Something was going on. But you almost like, oh, man, it was a little cringeworthy just because I want women to be portrayed as hardcore hunters. I want them to be hardcore hunters. And when we have numbers like 7% here, and that's reflected throughout the hunting industry. So when the Drury Brothers had that poll and the correct answer was 40% of all hunters or 30-some percent of all hunters, whatever it was, our women, it was almost like, and so what I found was in talking to HuntWise that the number of women who buy tags might be that 35-40% on an annual basis, but the women who are participating and actually really hardcore into it that might show up on some of these analytics, social media, and for some of these other companies that target hunters in general, is very, very low. And that sucks. It really does. I like hunting with you just because your spouse, your fiance, girlfriend, whatever, is supposed to be your best friend. And so I never understood myself why you wouldn't want to hunt with your best friend. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense to me. And so I'm from a different ilk. You know, I didn't grow up in deer camps in Michigan. I didn't grow up with an influence of older hunters, mentors. No one in my family hunted. So my brother and I had to do it on our own. And to have a woman hunt alongside was and is a very good thing. It's fun.
Yeah.
You know, just like hunting on opening day, like you said, that was fun because I want that big buck that I'm passing up to go over to Jen and I'm hoping she shoots. And so, and then even like the story we'll talk about in a little bit with Jackson and shooting a buck there, that was incredible.
Right.
And so now I'm gonna put you on the spot.
Okay.
Because I know there's nothing at all that could be wrong with hunting with me. Right?
Hey. I mean,
you're the crickets. So no, what do you not potentially like about hunting with me, boyfriend? Hopefully you don't have any boyfriends. You know,
I'm glad you interjected that one.
Significant other.
You know, I think there really isn't anything I don't like about hunting with you. I think we'll have a little bit of a roast Jeff sesh here. But because of, you know, your nature of just wanting to do everything right. You want the people around you that are hunting to do it right. You want them to make any mistakes. You want them to, you know, do the same things you do because they work, you know? So, sometimes it can be a little stressful because we that hunt with you don't want to screw it up. You know, Mike, Dante, you know, we want to do it right because we want you to be proud of us when we're...
You're saying Mike has PTSD?
Yeah, probably. That poor guy, I tell you what.
Yeah.
But so if there's something you don't like, that's... But I can't really say you don't like it. Want everybody to be...
No, I can understand that. I can understand that being stressful. I demand a lot from myself, not to the point where I don't make it fun for myself. I love to go hunting. How many times do you hear me complain about, got to go hunting? You know, I can't wait.
Yes.
I talk to Jen, like, I'm thinking about going to this stand or this stand. What do you think? And she'll tell me, I'm like, I was thinking about going to the other one, but I just wanted to hear. But either way,
yeah,
we like talking about it.
We have fun. Strategize with it.
Every sit.
At night and then in the morning, you know, when we're checking winds
again. For 3.5 months.
Right. Right.
And in the 2 or 3 weeks building up to it, it's even more kind of like, yeah. Man, I wish it was. And then we're watching Huntcast. With Huntwise, and we're watching that, and kind of like, man, next Wednesday is supposed to be a good day. If we were hunting, where would you sit?
Right.
And then we get to Wednesday, and yeah, we'd sit, and then sure enough, we get a trail cam photo, and that monster's going right by during daylight, and it's still 7 days before the season opens.
Right.
Or something like that. Yeah. But so yeah.
So those things are fun, but you know, it can be, and it never makes it not fun. You know, so let's make that clear. It never makes it not fun, but we, you know, we just want to make sure that we're doing it right. So I would say for other, you know, spouses, you know, they or people that have girlfriends or, you know, boyfriends, I would say primarily it's the guy that's going out and hunting. He wants to get away. You know, at least that's kind of what we as females hear. You know, like we want to get away. It's our time to go with our buddies and, you know, maybe time away from the kids. They work a lot, you know, et cetera. It's their zen time in the tree, if you will.
Right. And I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, I can appreciate that. You know, I can appreciate getting away like that.
Well, yeah. And you and I spend a lot of time together, mm-hmm. you know, and so when we're hunting alone in the tree, it's nice.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, you know, and that's what I was going to say. It's kind of, I'm trying to think of something bad with it. You know, at times I can't keep up with you. It's when we were going up that hill in Wisconsin this year, man, I was glad to have you pushing me along. I had COVID.
I was
going to
say,
again,
you're
going
sick,
up the hill. So
it was,
taking one break to get up the hill, 35 minute in uphill. It was probably at least 8 or 9.
I thought it was like more so like 11.
I was like heaving, like my hands on my
good.
Knees.
Yeah,
so she's there coaching me along. So that's because that's a good thing, not a
bad
thing.
By the time I got to the point to drop you off, I'm like, I gotta go. Like, please let me know.
She's
that.
Getting stressed.
Yeah,
just let me know you're alive still. But I got to get to my stand.
Basically, what
I
said.
It's opening day.
I gotta go.
But I think you know, I'm looking at it because maybe it's that I'm at a different point in my life. But I remember having good times with my buddies in Wisconsin when I'd come down. It was 7 hours away from home. And I enjoyed that. And I had some close friendships. And that's what developed friendships around here.
Sure.
And why I ended up moving in 2012. I'd hunted here for 10 years. I had close friends here that lived down here. Colin and Dave, they're the first people that I met around Wisconsin. And then from there, Aaron's a really close friend of mine too. So from there, I just kept meeting other people. And it just made me want to move. Not to mention, I had so many clients down here. But sure. I had a lot of good times. I can't say that if I had that partner and that spouse that wanted to hunt, that would have been awesome for them to come along. I probably would have gotten less trouble, I think.
you probably wouldn't have stayed out.
Probably would have slept more on those hunts. But I can say, honestly, I never missed a morning sit. No matter how late we were out, how much fun we were having the night before, I always made it out the next morning. And I had friends that didn't, to the point where I was waking them up at the hotel room for opening day of gun, and they just didn't make it. You know, I call them with a buck on the ground at 10:30, and they're just rolling out of the hotel. So, but anyways, so one of the things I can interject with that is it seems like, and I don't want to say it's a Southern thing, but it seems like even over in Wisconsin, I saw a lot of women deer camps. Mm. Have you known about those? Right?
No.
Saw women deer camps. We didn't have things like that in Michigan, at least around where I was at that I knew of. I can think of one in the UP where ladies would go out to deer camp. These are hardcore women hunters that were around where I used to live in Wisconsin. That was unusual. And so the camps that I knew of in the UP and Michigan and northern areas, some of them, now not all of them by any means, but some of them were pretty R or X rated. And a couple down the road from where I used to live, they were not women friendly, let alone kid friendly. And I think that's a bad thing. It seems like when you get to other areas, other than those traditional northern deer camps, you get to other areas and that's more family. And kids are involved more. I'd love to see that. I do not have the statistics. I would love to see when it gets down to the South.
Sure.
Really, women in hunting and family hunting, how prevalent that is down there compared to the northern deer camp. But the northern deer camps, they weren't kid-friendly, let alone women-friendly in some cases, too. So, and that's a bad thing because it's terrible for hunter recruitment. Imagine a kid that it's just getting into hunting when they're 16 because they're finally allowed to go to deer camp or 17. Well, if they haven't gotten into hunting by then, they're probably not going to stay or stick as a hunter, except more in a small percentage, rare circumstance. But I think, and I've known of people even currently today where they go out to a deer camp in XYZ state, and you might even know people I'm talking about, but it's not wife or girlfriend friendly. And I'm not saying they're even doing anything wrong. It's just that this is the guy time. Mm-hmm. We're getting out and it's guy hunting and this is what we do.
And it's our weekends, the guy weekend.
Well, and let's make a hunting business out of it so that we can say, hey, we got to go to work. You know, that's sorry. We got to make money for the family. Let's go hunting. And even to that drastic
you guys
of a
are
point.
Ridiculous.
Not me. I made a viable hunting business.
That's true.
Anyways.
That's true.
I think that's what it is. You know, people wanted to get away, getting away from the kids. And I can understand the older I get, you need that guy time. I mean, look at your stepfather, Greg. Mm-hmm. He likes to get away by himself on the weekend. It's not to say your mom's not there a lot. Your grandma's around a lot too during those times, but he likes his Greg time.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think the older, my dad, he grew to almost 82. He liked his dad time. Mm-hmm. So whether that was at home by himself on the couch or my mom went on a women's retreat somewhere and he stayed home, he liked that. Mm-hmm. And that's, but when it's at a young age and you have young kids and it's just really tough. So one of the things, gateway hunting. Now, what was your first hunting?
Mm.
I mean, I know you would deer hunting, we've talked about that when you're 12.
You know,
but
we were shooting birds with BB guns. That's what we were doing.
And eating them, of course.
Well,
yeah.
I mean,
Well, anyways.
I don't know about that, but yeah, we were shooting.
Did you ever shoot squirrels?
We did. Well, we tried.
Because I like squirrel crock pot.
We tried.
Yeah. Squirrel crock pot stew. Yeah, made that for my 10th grade or 11th grade chemistry teacher in home ec in high school.
You were in home ec.
Oh, yeah. I learned how to sew a scarf one time.
He didn't.
Oh, I did.
Did you actually?
I don't know. But I learned how to budget on $7 and buy a meal. We were able to make guacamole and chips and have squirrel stew.
Wow.
On that budget.
For $7?
Something like that.
I don't think we could do that anymore for $7.
This is like 1986, 87. I don't know. Okay. It's inflation.
Anyways, but bird hunting, we were shooting birds with BB guns or pellet guns. And yeah. I'm trying to remember how old I was back then. Or how old I Jen, use your words. How old I was then, and I just don't remember.
Maybe. And we do recommend for kids out there listening, you should eat what you shoot.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Because, well, anything you shot, you took to your mom.
Oh, they made squirrel stew.
Yeah, everything.
Rabbit stew, yeah. Whatever.
But, bird hunting, that's what we did.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what we thought.
And that's kind of what, you know, you talk about gateway hunting. One of the best ways to get new hunters into the sport, especially when it comes to women, is bird hunting, turkey hunting, pheasant hunting, grouse hunting. I'd say turkey hunting is right up there because it's warm. You can sit. You really don't have to go hardcore if you don't want. You call, they come to you. When a tom really lets loose, it's in gobbles. It's, you know, makes you shake. And when they come in close and you almost have a shot, it's pretty darn cool.
And they're ugly.
Yeah. So shooting turkey in the face, I mean, a lot of people don't have a problem with that. A lot of new hunters, women hunters. So as opposed to cute and cuddly rabbit, squirrel, doe, buck,
yeah, little, you know, deer,
pretty eyes, and mm-hmm. whatever else. And so getting someone into hunting and just introducing them and getting into something like bird hunting, I think gets them past that kind of like, oh, this is cuddly. This is, I don't know if I want to pull the trigger. Man, when it comes to bird hunting, I think when people pull the trigger and they feel that passion, they actually eat what they kill, mm-hmm. and they enjoy that, they want to stick. So
yeah, keep going and then try different things, explore the hunting world.
Yes. And I think that's one, you know, when you're trying to get your spouse into hunting, really try turkey hunting, bird hunting, go to pheasant preserve.
Yeah, pheasant hunting.
A lot of women are very good shots. I think there's not that stress that men have of got to hit the target in the center, got to win the shooting contest, or women just pull up and shoot.
Yeah, definitely. We put less stress on it, I think.
And maybe that's just their upbringing, whatever. But and I find that women like to shoot guns.
Yeah.
In general. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a fun thing that you can do as a couple, but that's one way to get people in. Now, kind of brings us to kids.
Yeah.
You know, how do you think we've done well with hunting and kids? Because I think, you know, we've talked about some ways to get kids involved and making sure it's kid friendly and we can introduce them to the sport of hunting, but
snacks.
I hate the sport of hunting, by the way. It's a passion. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than just a sport.
That's true. I would say with kids, we've done well with snacks.
Yeah. Snacks. Time snacks.
Yeah. It's, you know, and
drink.
Yeah. With, you know, specifically with Jackson, you know, he was out there when he was 3 weeks old, shot a turkey with me. Mm-hmm. And you were there too.
Yeah.
And, you know, since then, he's been in the turkey blind with us. He's been in the deer blind with us. Every time, you know, he loves and he enjoys being outside, you know. So,
oh, he does.
You know, so for him, long. it's almost like just an extra adventure.
Right.
You know, and it seems like it's something that he enjoys, and then we're lucky enough to be able to enjoy it together as a family.
And I think for that, you know, we're talking about kids and getting your spouse involved in hunting. Well, if the kids are hunting too, the spouse is typically going to come along. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be more of a group. It's not that your spouse has to shoot something. It's just being a part and making it more of a family event. I think it steps up into a different world and a different appreciation of hunting where, boy, this is fun to do with your kids. It's fun to see them succeed and like to get excited, yeah, and spouse.
You know, and it's big picture. Look at your Wisconsin buck this year. We had...
Oh, yeah.
We had you, myself, Jackson, Autumn, Joey, Dante, It was like the whole family was there for the recovery of this deer. And it was a fun family time because we all got to do that together and we all enjoyed being there.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with kids too, it's, I had my older kids, Jake, Autumn, Sam, they're 18, 21, 23. They were each in the blind before they were two. I have an old picture somewhere. It's not here, but I have an old picture somewhere of, Autumn and I going hunting, and it would have been in November of 2002, and she was not yet 2 years old. She turned two in December, so she was a little under 2 years old. She didn't have matching gloves on, and the UPS driver that was delivering probably something from Cabela's was snapping a photo of us out in front of our shed, kind of the same spot that my brother Kevin and I are in front of, that same shed right there. Sure. But each one of them were in the blind before they were two, sometimes together. And to this day, Sam loves to hunt. Mm-hmm. He sat with his girlfriend last year and girlfriend's sisters. And also Jake sat with us in the blind this year.
He sat with us a lot.
Yeah, he was there when Jackson shot his buck. So it was pretty cool because Jake was with me. Quarter mile away, Jen shoots, and then we were running over there to see what she shot. And that was a lot of fun. I think snacks, what I don't like is you see that trend, it's so easy just to throw an iPad or a phone at the kids and just let them play video games. For me, I'm just hoping I never fall into that because my older kids didn't have that. They had birds to watch. Mm-hmm. They had Z's to catch. They had snacks, stuff to drink. A book would be a great choice. So I'd rather see, I don't, and I know you're the same.
No, as soon as you said iPad, I'm like, I don't think an iPad would ever be with us, you know, in the...
No,
you know,
and I'm not saying if that's what you do. I mean, we're not saying that's better than having the kids not come at all. But the point is that I just want them to enjoy being out there with all that stuff.
Be mindful, you know, be mindful of who you're with, you know, what you're doing.
So I went through that with three kids already.
Yeah.
And so now we have Lily. She should be coming in less than 4 weeks now.
Yeah.
And Jackson is upstairs sleeping. He was really cranky on the way home. So, but he was out shed hunting with us. We walked around in the woods. He's little rubber boots on, and
he gets a shed in his hand, and he's like, "Don't take this from me."
But I hope you can see. You know, like even with Jackson when he was born, 3 weeks later, Jen shooting a tom, and the whole point was it's a family thing.
Yeah,
we had a great time.
Yeah, we sure did.
And so. You know, those are really important times, and I think when you include the kids, you include the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's something that brings everybody a little bit closer together.
Oh, it sure does.
You know, and those memories, you know, they last, of course, forever. It's always something you can look back on.
Right. Mm. Yeah, it's fun. We, and I think that's what this is, you know, about. I think almost sometimes you have to make a choice out there. It is great to go and have fun with the buddies. And I've been there, done that, but at the same time, to have someone that you can hunt with and share your life with, it doesn't mean, you know, we went to Saskatchewan last year, and we didn't take Jackson. No, we didn't leave him home by himself, but he was with his grandma and grandpa, and his aunt and uncle and the kids, and he hung around with other people for a week. So it doesn't mean that mom and dad can't get away. And I know for some of you, you can't do that, but we're fortunate. We can get away. It doesn't mean that we're always having to manage the kids. And that's what we did too. Jen would take her turn to go hunting. I'd stay home and watch Jax, especially bow hunting. And then we both took him twice gun hunting.
Yep.
So, and then the other one could hunt somewhere else. And I know when it comes to turkey season this year, you'll have Lily around the end of March, first of April, and then you'll be turkey hunting in April within a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, she has her...
all my own turkey calls. I got to start practicing in the truck.
Yeah, Myers makes some incredible calls over by us, southwest Wisconsin.
Yeah, I wish that they were closer to me.
And so that was your Christmas present.
That's the only thing I wanted. I think I told them that. I don't know, probably spring. Put this on your list. I want my own so I don't have to hoard yours.
So she got a beautiful box call and a pot call, glass call.
Yeah, so, really nice stuff.
Yeah, really, really pretty stuff too. But bottom line is, you know, we'll manage those times so we can get out by ourselves. We'll include the kids so we can actually hunt more, and getting it all, you know, giving everybody involved as a family, kind of what it's all about.
Yeah.
And I think it's a lot of fun. You know, yeah. Again, who better to hunt with than your best friend? So that brings up mailbag
time. Love mailbags.
Okay. So what do you got for us?
Well, so someone's got this property, and they're thinking about converting some of their ag.
You just making this up?
No.
Okay.
Why?
I was just wondering.
Well, it's kind of tangent off of, there's maybe a two-part question. Someone had, so ag.
And converting that ag.
Converting that ag. What's the first couple steps in doing that? What would you suggest? And then part two of that question is, well, I shouldn't say part two of that question. Another question would be an orchard. What if somebody buys a property, has a little bit of an orchard on it? What should they do with that?
Well, you know, with the ag, the big question with that is you have to be very realistic with yourself as to how much ag you're willing to dedicate
and what you're
to all wildlife
with.
And whitetail. And so that's, you have to figure out that acreage. So you have 20 acres to work with. Are you willing to give up 5, 10? Make that decision and then go from there and don't look back. So that's really, really critical. That's one of the biggest discussions we have with our clients in ag areas, because ag is bad when it comes to wildlife. Not ag on someone else's land around you. That helps push numbers up, gives deer a nighttime spot to eat. Mm-hmm. But ag on your own land is always bad for wildlife. You can always do something better with it on your own land. You can convert that to more bedding, more food, more depth of cover. You can hold more bucks. And in the case of some properties, you could have a 100-acre property and there's 50 acres of ag, and you're tripling the amount of mature buck potential and overall quality herd potential, which equals a similar hunt. It's all relative to each other and parallel. So if you have a high quality herd, you're going to have a high quality hunt. But you can sometimes triple, quadruple your potential or more by getting rid of that ag. So this isn't something, well, you make that property an 8.5 instead of an 8.25 or an 8. You go from a 5 to a 9, 9.5. That's the difference. Or you go from a 4 to a 9, 9.5. This is a drastic, drastic difference, changing it. So first step, a lot of times we work with, hey, can you just give us 20 feet of edge to work with around that ag field against the woods where you plan to hold deer, so that you can pull deer out of the woods and bring them further to that edge so they don't have to go 100 yards back into open timber and bed down for the day. Now you're actually increasing within that edge 100 yards of deer cover because you put screening mostly in the form of switchgrass, could be conifers, berms, hinge cuts, and or a combination of all those, but you bring those deer closer. So that's that first step. That can help you maximize. Imagine if you have ag surrounding an open hardwood 40 that you can stand and watch and look right through. Well, by putting that wall of protection just in 20 feet wide of switchgrass all the way around it, maybe some cuttings on the inside of the woods in that first layer, some hinge cuts or some timber cuttings so that you allow sunlight in, maybe dot that with some conifers. Now you have a complete edge where deer can actually live, and deer that are in the center of that 40 feel like they're pretty remote because they can't see out past that edge. You can have does and fawns closer to the edge. First step. Second step is you draw a line in the sand further out in that field where we're going to take out to this point, let's say 5 acres out of 20. Within that 5 acres, now you can put an appreciable food source of 1 to 2 acres, maybe even 3. You're surrounding that on the outside with switchgrass. You're putting that food closer towards that dividing line as much as possible. And then between that food and the woods, you're creating bedding habitat. Diversity pockets, pockets of switchgrass, all outlined in switch. So the deer on the inside are actually feel like they're concealed and in cover within 2 growing seasons, 2 summers. So you can make those changes right away and the deer can feel comfortable. That switchgrass becomes a base form of cover, no different than if you took red cedar in an area, took pockets out, got rid of the cedar, grass on the inside in those pockets, left the rest of the cedar, make trails through lower branches you can, and then get diversity within those pockets. Something green, something hardwood regen, shrubs, briars. If in the case of down south more, you might have forbs and forages and green growth, luscious green growth within those areas, herbaceous growth. But that's what you're doing. And then if you want to take 10, you're taking that same line and just moving it outward. Maybe a bigger food plot, maybe a couple hunting plots on either side, and even more bedding cover, and you just keep moving it back. Now you're increasing that depth on your parcel. We see a lot of those where it's almost like a cove of ag land in, and you're starting in the back. You just keep moving it forward to finally you're just, any reason you're drawing that straight line across is so farmers can actually move around it. And when it comes to orchards, we have apple trees we haven't managed on our property because they're not in the spot that we want to actually hold deer. Imagine this deer coming into an orchard. You can't hunt them because of the, where it's positioned. So in the middle of your property, for example, and those deer leave their beds, they feed in the orchard, and you never can see them, shoot them, because they're so far on your property, you can't get there without spooking deer or spooking deer while you're there. So I really like putting small little orchards and clusters of trees, diversity of trees, soft mass within shooting distance of a bow stand at the edge of food. So the food source gives full sun. You put it on the north side of the food source. And so I really love putting quality food with quality food. And that difference in separation of food, browse in the inside of the woods, and we talk about all the time, should be a 3 out of 10, a 4 out of 10, not a 0 like open hardwoods, not a 1 or 2 like just a bunch of oaks, but a 4 or 5 where you have woody browse, briars, hardwood regen. That's what they need during the day. But that's drastically different than the high-quality food you want to send those deer to every afternoon during daylight, which should be an 8 to 10 out of 10 in the form of your food plots. And then ag fields are back to a 5 out of 10, and that's all night, safe, social, and open. But that's how you want that distribution of food so the deer actually move, because then there's a difference in quality. You don't have that apple orchard in the middle of your property you're trying to create or manage, and the deer never come to the outside during daylight because they have great food on the inside. Mm-hmm. So it's a couple different topics, but hope that makes sense.
Makes sense so, to me.
I saw you like getting in a daze. I know you told me with this morning's podcast we shot that you didn't want me to ask you any questions.
No, because when you were talking about extending, I can't believe you are bringing this up. When you talked about, oh yeah, if you want to extend it more, and then you went in talking, I went somewhere right there, and I.
Oh,
know
you
I,
did.
Oh yeah,
same
I did.
With this morning same too.
This morning, I went somewhere. I don't know
where are you going.
I don't know.
Is those pregnancy hormone things?
It's got to be like I went somewhere like. Well, I think I saw Fred fly by, and that's.
Did you?
I did.
Fred is one of those
box elders.
Box elder, yeah. Bugs, beetles, whatever they are.
Yeah.
We have a few of them. So Fred was on my shoulder this morning around my zipper, and he normally hangs out on my hat.
I got distracted.
And then we had Ben the Beetle.
Ben the Beetle. I think you killed Ben the
Beetle. Yeah, he hit that door hard.
Oh, really hard.
Flicked him. Okay. Jen's got jokes.
Ooh, so I got this.
Was that what you were thinking of?
I don't think so.
Your mind was just blank,
wasn't it? I don't know if it was blank, but it was somewhere else.
Okay.
Somebody sent me a message on Instagram and said, basically, hey.
This was today. Like a couple hours ago, a few hours ago.
Right. People love me. But anyway, so we thought it was good, so I'm going to use it. So it's, why doesn't the bell pepper bow hunt? He doesn't have an arrow.
I like that one. That was a good one.
Yeah. It's a good way to end the hunting podcast.
Yeah. Get your spouse, significant other, into hunting. I think it'll give you more opportunity to hunt too. Get your kids, get the family involved. We have friends, Skip and Tracy and their kids. They've taken them to Texas to go hunting in January or February. Yeah, had a great time. That's been some of their family vacations, is taking all the kids or son, daughter hunting. Pretty cool to see that. And it's unfortunately way too uncommon. And I hope you can gain some insight on, it's a whole lot of fun. It's a great way to extend your time outdoors. And while you're at it, bring new hunters and retain hunters within the hunting ranks. So that's the end. End
End
of episode 23.